And it's just awful. I mean, you're just getting waxed. I mean, I have not thrown the controller more in my life than at Crucible. But here's the thing. I didn't throw away the controller, walk outside, and, spend time with my family. I said, I can get better at this.
This is Up, Up, Down, Down, the show about the art and craft of video games. I'm Alan Pike. Joining us today is Nigel Brook, 15-year veteran of the games industry, having worked for Radical Entertainment, later Activision, is now co-founder of Steam Clock Software. Hi, Nigel.
Hello.
Also joining us today is Michael Lopp. Lopp writes Rands in Repose, the acclaimed blog on successfully managing geeks, heads up engineering at Pinterest, and is proud owner of the Invective Exotic Shotgun. Hi, Lopp.
Hello.
How's it going?
It's going really well.
So we have Lopp on the show today to talk about a very interesting topic. We don't normally do shows about one game, but I thought this would make the cut. Today we're talking about Destiny. Destiny, the game, of course, that for months on this show we made fun of before it came out. They're spending $500 million. How could they possibly ever make that amount of money back? And then finally, with all the hype, the game launched in September and was a colossal failure and no one ever heard of it. I was doing a little bit of research on this before recording, and I hadn't realized that not only was Destiny profitable, is already profitable, it was profitable on day one. They shipped $500 million of units on the first day.
Wow. That's not precisely true. $500 million is the sell in. Not the sell through. The sell through, it looks like, was more like 300 and some million, which is, I mean, still an impressive amount of money. But, I mean, one thing you can kind of tell with the publicity surrounding this, and I'm sure Destiny is going to be profitable. Like, I don't think they're going to lose money on it. But Activision has been very cagey about ever actually coming out and saying, like, this is how many copies we sold at retail, which is kind of unusual for them. Like, they have no problem touting those numbers for, like, Call of Duty and some of the other, big franchises and stuff like that. But they've been pretty cagey about that with Destiny, which leads me to believe that at least it didn't meet their expectations, even though, like you say, it's almost certainly sold well enough that they've made their money back on it. But I don't think they were looking for a machine to turn like $500 million into $700 million. I think they were looking for a machine to turn $500 million into like $2 billion, and that does not appear to be the case.
Or at least not yet. But I mean, really, when was the last time new IP, like something that's not a sequel, sold even $300 million on the first day? Like, I mean,
yeah, it's been a while. It is fantastically successful by that metric for a new IP. Yeah, I certainly can't think of any other new IP that's been that successful on day one.
So it's obviously been selling a lot, but when it first launched, the reviews were pretty like mixed. We got about like 7 out of 10 on a lot of sites. Polygon gave it a 6, which is, sounds pretty good if you're not familiar with game reviews, but that's basically like the equivalent of a 2 out of 4 star rating in the film industry. It's kind of like, yeah, I mean, it's a game, I guess. And I had that sort of kind of similar opinion of it when I first playing it, like, yeah, okay, well, but something that seems pretty unusual compared to most games that I see is that people's interest in it has actually been, it seems to increase over time. Like, people are not like doing the normal, oh, after 3 or 4 weeks, they get sick of it. But people are still playing it, which, and it was your post on Rands in Repose, still playing Destiny, up, that made me sort of like, I'm sort of aware of it, but like really settled in for me. Like, and also, like, even people who are not really in the game industry and not necessarily in like hardcore gamers all over the place, I see people still like just tweeting back and forth, like a journalist tweeting some developer I know, like, oh, like, did you get the new Destiny weapon? Even though they're not really into games. So, what is your sort of, at a high level, what's your theory as to why?
So let me just disclose right now that I'm not like avid, hardcore gamer. Did a lot of World of Warcraft, like a lot, like way too much. But I've been really busy, you know, running businesses and writing about things that don't have anything to do with video games. So what was interesting to me, and the reason I wrote the post, was my son got Destiny, the PS4 was sitting down there, and I kind of sat down, and I had that first day of like, well, the day is gone, and I just played it. And it just continued on. And this is amongst all of the bad PR that the game was getting. I'm like, what am I missing here? Because I'm really actually enjoying myself. And what I'm finding is the game is revealing itself. There's more to be learned. Last night, I was going, okay, oh, I get why the app now allows you to swap things between the vault and the app. I'm like, I totally get it, because you have two characters and you're moving stuff around.
Oh, so that's why. I was like, why is there a vault? So I think Nigel might have been asking me that yesterday.
Yeah, we were just talking about that. We played a couple of games of it yesterday together just to sort of prep for this. And I was asking Alan, like, what the heck's the point of this vault? Have you ever used this for anything? But I didn't realize that the vault was shared between your characters. I'm still working on my first character, so.
So this is the thing, and I realized this was last night, and this is like after like two or three solid months of playing it, and I'm sure there's people out there who just totally figured this out in the first second, was remember that armor is all associated with your character and is leveled up to have the character, and light increases your level, but the weapons don't do that. And I was wondering, like, why is there not light in the weapons? Why can't I level up my weapons? It's because the weapons are for all the characters, which means when you're jumping between characters, everything you've leveled up, if you're level 20 or higher, goes between the different characters. And your armor is your class-specific stuff that is your character, which makes a lot of sense because I'm leveling up a Titan now, and I'm running around with these total idiotic weapons, and I'm playing with this guy online. He's like, where's your plan C, or where's your blah, blah, blah? And I'm like, on my other character? He's like, it should be on this character. I'm like, oh, I get it. So, but the point was this, is like there's these continuing layers that I'm finding, which is just triggering all of the awesome game pleasure centers in my head, and I'm having a ball. I'm like pulling in people. I'm running Crota every night. I'm running Crota, you know, a couple times a week, and I'm having fun. And it hasn't been since really World of Warcraft, maybe Burning Crusade, that I've just had that sort of like, you know, that fever.
Yeah, it's kind of funny that you use Burning Crusade as an example, because I also think that like that really sort of unexpectedly enjoying really grinding is what it is. Unexpectedly enjoying grinding thing hasn't triggered for me to the same degree since Burning Crusade World of Warcraft, which is, I mean, a good thing and a bad thing in that there's a reason I stopped playing that, but.
Sure, same here.
Yeah. So this is a sort of interesting phenomenon, and I'd be interested to try and unpack and get a little bit of sense game design wise how the game ended up with this sort of path where, you know, on its surface it seems like, okay, it's a grindy shooter, but then you sort of are unexpectedly having like a lot more fun. And definitely, like, I got the feeling even in the first few levels when I was more focused on the story and like rolling my eyes and like, oh great, like, yeah, this voice acting is really bad, but I still kept wanting to play. And I don't know how much of that in the early levels is just like the fact that they've really tuned the pace of like giving you your rewards. Like, oh, you gained a level, you gained a level, you gained a level. Like, and like when you end a match or a level, there's that screen which shows all the people who completed that event. And then it has the little like slot machine spinners that show you the items that you get and stuff like that. Like, I think that stuff is all really well done.
I think also the shooting gameplay is really well done. Like that, you know, that's something for me that sets it apart from some of the other grindy games that are out there that never really appealed to me, is like, I'm an FPS kind of guy, and like, this is a good FPS. Like, the weapons all feel really tight. Like, I'd prefer a little more variety, like a little more like classic Unreal Tournament style, just whole selection of crazy weapons. But what you've got is pretty solid in terms of how they're tuned, and you got lots of different play styles, and like everything feels really good, which is not surprising coming from Bungie. You know, they've got a lot of experience with this kind of stuff. So, you know, the gameplay I think is more appealing than the gameplay of something like a Diablo or a World of Warcraft, where it's like, yeah, they're okay, but I haven't really talked to a lot of people that say like they have a lot of fun with the specific mechanics of those games to the degree that I have fun just playing a first person shooter.
Yeah. And the thing for me is it kind of goes back to that Unreal Tournament and those Quake days. And I wrote about this where it's hard. Like, you go into Crucible, and I'm a big PvP player because I like the skill factor. of getting in there and, like, you know, waxing folks. I just played before I jumped on here and I had my best game. I had a DK? I always forget the stat. Like 4-4. I'm like, and like, that's incredibly high for Crucible because it's so hard to kill folks. It's so, there's so much work to actually get someone down. And that was interesting to me. I haven't been playing a lot of FPS. Was they actually said, it's going to be really hard. It's going to be hard to be good at this, which is really contrary to a lot of game design where they want to get you in. You want to have that first hour be like incredibly satisfying. And games have gotten a lot easier. It's like, it's the Candy Crush world, right? And I like that it's hard. I like that Crucible, for me, after doing it a lot, it's still something that's really hard for me to play. And in the raids are actually, they kind of have that sort of WoW feel to them, and that there's this big puzzle, but it's also FPS. So like WoW raiding plus FPS, it's kind of cool.
How, not really having played much like Unreal Tournament or those games, the other FPS I've probably played the most is Team Fortress. How does this, like, the time to kill sort of metric, which is something that, like, Bungie specifically talks about, like, people were saying, why do you nerf the guns that I like instead of just making all the other ones better? And they explained, actually, which makes total sense, was that the game would get too fast. It would just get faster and faster. You'd be able to kill people faster and faster if they're constantly doing that. And so the time to kill that they've had and the fact that everyone has a lot of health and their shields regenerate mean that you have a pretty hard time killing someone who's better than you.
Yeah,
like face to face, you're pretty much always going to lose.
Yeah.
how does that compare to the sort of older generations, like Unreal and those sort of games?
For me, it's been so long, I don't even remember, but I played enough Call of Duty to know that it was kind of twitchy. You'd walk in a room and bam, 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 and three are down, which, by the way, is awesome. But it's, I like that there's this friction to actually get to that spot of having that. And I don't remember what Unreal and Quake was like. It's been so many years, but you know, it's that again, it's work. It's a puzzle to solve. You know that you can't walk in the room and just clear them out unless you've got your super up. But that, to me, again, just makes it much more of a engaging mental experience than just getting there and twitching around.
I would say definitely Destiny, like from what I remember, again, a long time ago for me as well, but from what I remember, like, time to kill in Quake and Unreal Tournament is a lot lower than Destiny. Like, certainly they're not, you know, it's not like grindy to bring people down in those games. And I mean, it is certainly for me in Destiny. Like, I'm fairly low level, so like the time for other people to kill me is extremely low, but my time to kill is not, you know, it's not very good at all. But yeah, definitely of the competitive kind of FPSs that I've played, it seems like one of the ones where it's the most, you spend the most time kind of picking away at people, and the regenerating health, you know, definitely is a big factor of that. Now, I didn't play hardly any Halo multiplayer, Halo's famous for pioneering the mechanism of the regenerating shield for combat, and so I don't know, like, Halo multiplayer may have some of the same stuff going on, and I played, like, maybe, I think I probably played more matches of Destiny multiplayer than I played Halo, even though I've played, like, 6 Destiny matches or something like that, right? So, but yeah, that's definitely a big factor in what makes it certainly kind of frustrating for a newbie, like how difficult it is to ever get a kill against anyone when you're, you know, every game that I've been in so far, I've been the player with the lowest level. So I'm lucky to get like 1 or 2 kills the entire match.
And that's the thing is, here I am in like maybe month 3, and I've got Destiny DB up in front of me right now, and I'm looking at my monthly KD, and it was miserable for the first month or so. It was exactly that story of like 3 or so, but I'm like, I know I can get better at this. And they give you enough feedback to say, you can look around, and I don't know how they're doing the compiling the matches, but it's again, it's a puzzle. It's this thing to be solved. So here I am in month 3, and if I'm getting 0.8 KD, I'm pretty good. I'm really happy with that. And when I'm over 1, I'm like really happy with that. That's 1-to-1 kills, which means you're mostly dying. And but I'm still having this, I'm still having this sense of progression, because I'm having a ball.
I would be pretty excited to have 1-to-1 to kill someone once for every time I die in Crucible.
Well, this is what, This one had 4.4. I had 4.4 in this last one. I mean, it might be my best game ever. And it was like two or three like just random occurrences. But still, there is this skill to be built that is very satisfying.
It's strange, though, having that regenerating aspect to it, though, as somebody who's played enough different competitive things that I feel like at least, worst case scenario, if I suck, and there's someone who's really driving me crazy, that I can just go after them over and over again and eventually wear them down. And like, right. Yeah, I guess maybe that encourages people to feed kills to the better players. I don't know. Right, but the fact that you knew that you at least that time I got them a third of the way down. At that time I got them three quarters of the way down. That in Destiny, that's worth nothing. You get no points. You get no value. You accomplished absolutely nothing by spraying bullets into that person, other than the fact that like maybe that they were distracted so someone else can kill them on your team. Maybe. But most of the time, like it's pretty common for me to literally have no impact on the game for minutes at a time, which is weird. Well, it's a weird game design decision.
So the only one I'm playing relative to PvP mostly 99% of the time is Control.
Right.
And that's the crack right now. And it's because it encourages that team aspect. And by the way, now I'm kind of getting snooty about my Control matches. I'm like, hey, we got to have A, B, because C is complete shit. Right. And I'm like yelling at no one in particular if I'm going by myself. But that, and this is something that I've done a lot of research on, but it seems like in terms of the game design, they want to encourage the team play. And it's true. I'm having a lot more fun. One of the reasons I wrote the article in the first place, I was like, I'm trying to gather together this group of folks so I'm not like pulling in the random lovely people of the internet in. So I'd like to have a group of folks that can randomly just do stuff with, have high quality interactions with them. Because there is a reward for getting that team together and that sort of collective mission that everyone's on, which is not, they're optimizing for that.
Though a weird decision that they've made that I don't know exactly whether, this is intentional or just they didn't want to build the extra game modes, is that Control is kind of the most team focused game, but it's still less team focused than lots of other game styles that are out there, right? Like they don't have a capture the flag mode. They don't have like a progressive capture mode, something like Assault in the old Unreal Tournament, where you've got this asymmetric, like, one team is locking down progress and the other one's trying to hold them back, and or the more like free flowing progressive capture of, I can't remember what the game mode was, but the one where you have to capture like the power nodes, but the nodes are sort of connected, so there's particular patterns. Another Unreal Tournament. I always really enjoyed playing those modes in Unreal Tournament, both because I felt they really encouraged teamwork, and because it felt like you could be competitive in them just by being kind of strategically smart about things. That it was possible. It was possible to contribute above your Twitch shooting skill level by being smart about how you did things, which I always really appreciated about those. Like even by the time I'd gotten really good at them to the point where my skill was competitive. I have that now, like the other big competitive game that I've been playing the last little while. One, because it's kind of fun, but also because I can play it with the kids, Destiny, I do play. Well, I don't play with my kids because we've only got the one PS4, but we sort of trade off and play together and stuff like that. Plants vs. Zombies Garden Warfare. And it's really good that way because it's one of those things where I play it kind of casually. I'm not nearly as good as a lot of these like 12-year-olds with, the full range of motor response remaining as opposed to kind of having faded over time. But I'm way smarter than most of those 12-year-olds, so I can still contribute really strongly to that game by saying, like, oh, here's a character class that we're missing some of. So if I switch to that character class, like, I'm going to be able to really help out or stuff like that. And I don't get that sense, at least from what I've played so far, of Destiny. Like, it doesn't seem like it seems like it's hard to contribute if you're a low-level character and a person that's not that hasn't developed the skills yet, which is kind of frustrating. And I think a lot of that comes back to this decision of all the modes are essentially team deathmatch style modes, right? There's none of that like strategic element to the game design.
So this is interesting because they just had a Q&A they posted on like Planet Destiny that I read this morning. And it says the question was, will we ever get true objective modes? And the answer is maybe someday. The real answer is that our initial collection of game types were designed to promote teamwork without putting undue pressure on any one player. Now, I haven't ever designed a game in my life, but the what's interesting at what I read in that and what and based on what you're saying is what they're trying to do right now. And this goes to this whole like myth of like they have this 10-year plan of what I see them doing. Uninformed, haven't designed a game in my life, is they're trying to make it really an interesting game, and they're trying to get that knitting of like all the people playing together and not having that one person, not having that you don't need intricate other than Rage. You don't want intricate team dynamics right now, because right now it's just about figuring out the base game, getting your folks together, getting together your clans, and then I would just assume they're going to have more and more intricate games so that for those teams that are going to be able to do more and more sort of intricate play. I don't know. That's me thinking out loud.
It's interesting that they say they're concerned about not wanting to put too much pressure on one player, because maybe if I play enough, the system will balance this out. But I see a lot of the time I get put into Crucible matches where there's one good player and then four or five bad players. And so basically it's one good player on our team and one good player on the other team, and they duke it out, and then everyone else just fodder for those two people to kill. And so if the good player on our team is having a bad day, or he has to like go to the washroom while the thing is going or something, then we lose. And I guess the advantage of matchmaking that way, which seems to just be collect 12 people and then split them up as you find them, is that that means that you can have matches start really fast. But it seems like a weird choice how diverse the teams are.
Yeah, and there's this thing that I've seen a couple of people do that I've been when I'm playing together with a team in Crucible, is they come in and they put on all their crappy gear. So when the selection is going, everyone of these 31s and so are down to 20 because they've got their crappy gear on. And I don't know whether it's working or not, but they're trying to pull in cannon fodder for other folks, because it goes, oh, you're a 20, I'll match you with similar play. I don't know whether that works or not, but I think it'd be fascinating to get a little more insight into how the Crucible matchmaking works, because I'd just be interested in how they're actually pulling it off. Because here's the thing, when you go, the Iron Banner event kicks in, the gameplay is completely different. You go from like kind of, you know, saw if you're really reasonably good, kind of just cleaning house to just getting your ass kicked, because the leveling advantages or whatever that flattening that they do between different players is gone. So you really are representing what armor is and what weapons you have. So it's fascinating to see how it plays out when you're playing against equal players all the time.
What I was able to find kind of doing some minimal research is that there's this idea of a combat rating, which you can't see in the game. You need to like log on to Bungie.net and give them your DNA or whatever to go on and see it. But sweet, they got me now, because I want to see what my combat rating was. And it's, I get like an ELO type thing that starts at 100, and then as you lose games, it goes down. And then if you win games, it goes up. And like if you have 200, then you're like a world leader in the game. And I have 38.
and clearly they're keying off that kind of hidden information, because I've been in a couple of games where it looked like one team was going to get destroyed because it was all relatively low-level people. And then some of the low-level people were just kicking butt, and other ones were not kicking butt. And it was pretty clear that it was those were secondary characters for someone who had leveled way up on a different character and were really good players. But now they're like, okay, well, I've maxed out my Titan and my Hunter, and so I'm playing as my warlock, and I'm only like level 6, even though it's because I started playing yesterday, kind of thing, right? Yeah. It seems to be pretty good, the matchmaking, about doing that. Like most of the games that I've been in have been reasonably close, even though it was this huge range of skills in the match. It seems like the matchmaking doesn't tend to fail in the way of like a particular team just gets blown out. It seems to fail in the way of a particular player is just useless. Whereas it seems like it would be nicer to have a mode where you could say, just put me with other people who don't know what they're doing.
Yeah, I think you're right. I just, having played quite a bit of Crucible over the last couple of months, it's, and getting blown out plenty of times, you're right. 20%, 10% of the time, it's a total blowout. But the rest of the time, it's like, it's interesting and it's a nice balance. And you're in maybe more like 30%, but like 70% of the time, the match is pretty fairly balanced.
You mentioned about the leveling of gear out in the Iron Banner. They just sort of let you get destroyed by people who are higher level than you, which is cool that they give that as an option. And it's cool that they have that off by default. But how much, as far as you know, does the gear and abilities that you have affect Crucible? Because I get the feeling, like, definitely I can get killed by lower level alts from people, but I feel like... and I was able to read a little bit that certain things, certain aspects of your gear make a difference, like higher impact weapons or something like that. Do you have more details on that?
I don't have any details on it. I can just tell you sort of the intuit. My feel is it's when you're sitting there staring at a 31 and you're a 30, it's marginally harder to get them down. Sorry, this is not specific at all, not at all answering the question, but you get that sense of when you're staring at someone who's got a level or two above you that you know it's going to be a little bit harder to get them. But I don't know what the breakdown of the stats are from the armor and from the weapons. But it is. But the other thing is, because I think because the pool of people is generally people who don't want to get waxed, you're also just generally playing against a higher caliber of player, plus these leveling advantages being disabled. I'm saying that wrong, but that to me is the other thing. Is it's like it's really pretty world class in terms of the folks you're playing against, and it's really hard.
Yeah, I mean there are going to be people that are just going to avoid the Crucible stuff because they find it too hard. Like definitely that's gone on to some degree in our house. That like my son Sam, who's the other person who's playing a fair amount of Destiny, he's higher level than me and farther than me in the single player missions. I mean, we're still just dipping into the game. Like we haven't even finished the single player game, but he's way ahead of me in terms of the single player missions. But he does not like playing the Crucible matches at all. Whereas like I'm still getting destroyed at them, but I know what the learning curve on stuff like this is like. Like I know that I can push through it, whereas he's just like, I think he's played two Crucible matches, and the second one he handed the controller over to me for the second half of it because he just couldn't handle it.
So that's interesting because I just want a friend of mine at Christmas just went through that exact same emotional process that I think I went through as well. And I think you've had to have played some games to have this reaction. Is you walk into Crucible and it's just awful. I mean, you're just getting waxed. I mean, I have not thrown the controller more in my life than at Crucible. But here's the thing. I didn't throw away the controller, walk outside and, spend time with my family. I said, I can get better at this. And that to me was interesting. Whatever they did is they gave me the impression, and maybe it's just I played a lot of games, but the way that I played it and how it was, the fun that I was having maybe outside of Crucible gave me this promise or this illusion that I knew I could get better at it. And that's different than other games where I walk in and you just get waxed and you're like, oh, I'm really bad at this. This isn't any fun. And you walk away. I stuck it with Crucible and for a long time until I'm not great now. I'd say I'm good. They created that system. And I'm not sure if that's like, I just want it to be good because it's Bungie or whether it's part of the game mechanics. But other games, I've had the same experience. I'm like, screw this. I'm never going to get do well at this. I'm going to walk away.
I mean, some of that I wonder is how much it is if you've been through that before, right? Like, I know I can get better at it because I got better with Quake 1 and Quake 2 and Quake 3 and Unreal Tournament and Unreal Tournament 2003 and 2004 and Plants vs. Zombies going worth it. Like all of those, I've been through this to some degree or another based on what the difficulty tuning of those particular games is. So for me, getting waxed in my first 6-8 matches is not a huge deal. And being waxed in like the next 20 or 30, which I'm sure is what will happen, is not going to be a big deal. But if, like, I mean, we talked about this before on the podcast, is that, you know, something has definitely changed about the difficulty of games the last little while in terms of easing the difficulty curve ramp in and not having these hard cliffs and stuff like that before. And, you know, like you said, this game's a bit of a throwback in that respect, that it's a lot more... The difficulty curve is a lot more like these older games. And if you haven't, you know, if you haven't played them, haven't been through that experience of just getting destroyed all the time, maybe you don't know that on the other side is you being competitive.
Yeah, absolutely.
I want to talk a little bit. So definitely, to me, the Crucible is the most interesting part of the game because I feel like I can eventually get better and it doesn't feel like... I feel like I'm learning something every time I play it, which is a good feeling. But it seems from talking to other people, like most people are spending most of their time on the PvE, the sort of player versus environment levels, the strikes, and then working up towards the raids. And yeah. I'm kind of surprised, from what I've seen, not having gone into the raids, which I hear are quite well designed, but for like the normal strikes and stuff like that, it just seems very plodding. Like even more so than like doing dungeons in WoW. Even though you like, oh, I've done the same dungeon however many times, each one felt quite different, and they would often have little interesting mechanics. And like, oh, here's this room where you have to do this particular thing, and it was kind of tactical. Whereas most of the strikes that I played are very much just like, trash comes, you shoot at them, trash comes, you shoot at them. And then you get to this ridiculous bullet sponge boss at the end that takes 20 minutes of shooting at.
The bullet spongiest bullet sponge that ever sponged a bullet. Yeah. Like, it's, I mean, those guys are ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
So,
no, it's just sitting there and doing this patience. You're just like sitting there going, oh, okay, I just got to get this guy down. I do have an opinion about this, but finish your observation.
Well, yeah, basically my observation is like, what's your opinion on this? Like, why did they build it that way, that it's so right. spongy and so grindy? Like, I mean, I have yeah. some theories, but like, what's your take on it?
Well, so I don't do a lot of the strikes and the nightfalls, not because it's so grindy and whatnot. It's just there's other ways that I can gather my rep, get my glimmer, and do that sort of thing. But let me first say that the raids, I'll go back to strikes in a second. The raids are really interesting in that they have that WoW feel to them. That I've done Vault of Glass 10 times now, and every time it's been different. It's exactly the same encounter, but people have different things that they're doing, and they're figuring out how to cheese it and do all this stuff. It's got all the same vibe as the WoW raids do in terms of like, what are we going to do on this one? That's just fascinating to me.
Yeah, definitely. Especially in WoW, and I'm hearing the same thing in Destiny. People will say things like, oh, yeah, you're not really playing the game until you're doing, like, the end game raiding. That's the actual game. Everything before that yeah. is just the grinding and able to let you yeah. get there, which is also a weird game design decision. Like, obviously, it works because, you know, two of the most successful games of all time do it, and people are really into it. Right. But, like,
right. But the strikes, I'm kind of with you. To me, they're all me just basically getting whatever currency to go and buy that thing or level up that thing, and strikes and the nightfall are just ways to do that quick, fast, and you know, and it is grindy. But I was thinking about this because we chatted before we did this podcast, is what is grinding to me is it's what you're trying to achieve. Now in WoW, in the Burning Crusade, there was this Nether Drake mount. Do you remember this dragon
yeah.
mount?
It was
the first
that.
Dragon mount, right? And it was 3 months, and it was time-based. You only could do a certain amount of the dailies or whatever the hell. But like talking about 3 months to get this set of bits that is basically represents a dragon on your screen.
And is this like grinding faction reputation? Like, gather 10 herbs to grind your faction for the Rumpelcloak gnomes. And then,
and you could only get like, 300 a day, and there was like 3 levels to it. And it was time-based. I mean, it was time-limited. You only could really do it like, if you totally devoted in 3 months or whatever it was. And here it is, I don't know, 7 years after the fact, and I'm still like, nailed it. I did this thing, and it was boring as hell. My wife was mad at me because I was just jumping in at, you know, 9 a.m., and I could be done in 30 minutes with the grind and whatnot. But the point was this, was I was going to achieve this, get this flying dragon, which, and that's the thing is, for strikes, for, you know, getting Spirit Bloom, for whatever the hell you're doing, it's because you're sitting here getting to the going for the gear or getting leveling up this character quickly or doing whatever it is. It's this puzzle to be solved. If it ever feels like grinding, you stop, right? If it's really boring, you stop. This is the thing, the deal we have with games. So if it's grinding towards a goal that you care about, like I just got this awesome helm, so I'm just going to go grind through a bunch of bounties over the course of the rest of the day to get this helm up because it's got this perk. And I don't care about the hour and a half. I mean, it'll be fun. I'll be like, you know, trying to figure out how to use this sniper rifle I have as well. But it's because I'm going to achieve this thing that makes the grinding tolerable.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's that aspect of giving quests and having grindable, repetitive actions that are fun and actually satisfying on their own is the really big thing, right? Like in WoW, gathering herbs, like going around and just walking over the next herb and then holding on it while you gather it and gathering the next one was fun, like maybe the first like two to four times you gathered an herb, right? Like eventually it stops being fun and that's at like 0.01% of the time you will ever do that. And so that is something where it's just a time sink. It's basically like maybe proximally, like just slightly more fun than just like laying there, like but like not as restful. Whereas in Destiny, and I've seen this come up actually just in the last few years, becoming more popular, like repeatable daily quests, having a wide variety and actually asking you to do things that you wouldn't otherwise do. So things like, you know, get 10 headshots. And you're like, well, you're normally a shotgun player, but you're like, you know what? Like, let's practice that game mechanic. And Hearthstone doing things like, oh, win 5 games as Paladin. You're like, oh, I hate Paladin, but fine, okay, I'll make a Paladin deck. And then I'm like, oh, actually, Paladin's not so bad. And that is way better to me.
Yeah, and Destiny, I think fundamentally that micro moment-to-moment shooter gameplay is just way more fun than collecting herbs, right? Like when you're doing the patrol missions, essentially every one of those little like blinking beacon missions that you get is just like kill some number of guys until you've killed enough guys to collect enough of the, you know, plot device to cash it in for your, you know, for your fact that you've completed the mission. Like the missions are not what you would call sophisticated, like multi-stage missions or anything like that. And, but you know, that gameplay's fun, right? Like, I don't mind going and getting it, and it's just like, oh, okay, kill, you know, kill 20 of these guys and collect the stuff from them. And it, because the gameplay itself is right in the sweet spot of what I enjoy. Whereas, yeah, running around, like, picking stuff up, that's not fun gameplay to me, right?
And you can have, like I sat down this morning, a cup of coffee, I'm like, what am I doing this morning? I'm like, okay, I'm living up this helm. Oh, and I want to try this gun out. You could be doing, in addition to getting rep or collecting glimmer or whatever the hell you're doing, you could be doing two or three things at the same time, which again gives that weight to, is this mental math that you're doing, is like, is this grinding worth it? So you've got multiple things you're working on at any given time, which I think makes that grindingness a little less, more tolerable.
The grindiness does get less when you go back. Like, that's one thing that's kind of frustrating for me about it now, is because I'm still in the initial leveling things up phase, that, you know, I don't have the ability to, like, a lot of these enemies just take a long time. Like, even if I know what the strategy is, it's just like my guns are not big enough. If I was coming back and, you know, redoing a strike that I was, you know, 5 levels higher than, I'm sure that it wouldn't seem like quite as much of a chore to bring the guy down. Though on the other hand, like when we played that strike mission the other day, Alan, where it was like we were doing the level 12 strike and like I was level 10 and Alan was level 21 or something like that. And there was like another level 9 guy who we didn't know who'd been paired with us. And we spent like probably 20 minutes pouring bullets into that guy and had got him like barely halfway down, and then we died and we're just like, all
right. So this is Fogoth, the guy in the summoning pits, which I basically now refuse to do because I've done the summoning pits strike maybe 5 or 6 times. When I did it like solo or whatever, it was fine. Yeah. Like the first time I did it. But going back to it, like as a higher level character, either trying to run lower people who are too low level to do it or doing it as like part of a strike playlist, it's always like you grind through, you kill trash for like 20, 30 minutes and you get to this guy who's chained and he's big and epic. Oh, cool. And then it's just, you make no progress for so long and it's just trash never stops coming. And man, that's just, I'm not doing that level ever.
Well, there is a strategy on that one. And I totally get what you're saying, but you stay on one side and it's actually, you can avoid a lot of the trash. But here's the other thing that I think it's more important. I learned this getting up to 30, 31, 32 is, exponential lug when, like, I don't know what the right one is. Like the difference of damage that you do between 30 and 31 is like 60%.
Really?
So that yeah, it's like huge. It's like one of my son's friends told me this, so it must be true. So it's, But you go into that strike as a 30, at 30, and then you come in at 31. The amount of damage you do against that stupid big dog guy, we call him the dog, is it's much more tolerable. And you get really rewarded for getting up to that 30, 31 in terms of those things. The sponge bullet situation, I'm leveling up a Titan right now. So he's like 27 or something. And I'm like back, I'm like, oh, I remember this. This is a 20 minute thing. At 30, 31, you actually tear through. You've had three 32s tearing through the strike or the nightfall. It goes super fast. And that's, again, not fun when you're 12, but it's super fun when you're 31. You're like, yep, I can tear through this stuff. So you've got to want it.
That's a game design risk, though, like having these missions that are set up in a way that they can be played by people across that wide a range of equipment and stuff like that, because it has that potential to create a wall, right? Or even if it doesn't create a wall, like create a sort of boredom wall, right? Like, yeah. I'm sure that we could have got through that mission. Like, it didn't feel like, it wasn't one of those things like, oh, this is just way too difficult. Like, right. The only reason
I died is because I was getting bored and I got a little too cocky. That's the only reason.
Like, the little mobs were coming and they weren't that hard to take out when they came. And, like, we could do some damage to the guy and his beam weapon was not hard to avoid. Right, it's right. just... It's so long doing it that even if you can do it, it's like, why am I bothering with this? And I mean, part of that is setting the expectations. Like, maybe the thing that I don't know is that even though it says level 12, like you shouldn't really be doing that mission until you've got like three level 25 people that you can take in with you. That level 12 is like, okay, at level 12, it's going to stop you just dying all the time and you'll be able to. You'll be able to do it as long as you're willing to play for long enough. But that did not seem like it was going to be a fun experience for me at at the level that I was under level a little bit, but I had Alan with me, so I think that sort of balanced it out. But I think I've now just hit level 12. I played a little more later in the day after we'd done that and got to level 12, and I still don't feel like I would want to do that mission with my current damage dealing capacity.
I had exactly the same experience in like mid game, like 12 to like 18, where I'd go in and just by myself and be like, I'm never going to get this person down. They shouldn't allow you to go into one solo or with a low level. It's not going to, you have a decent chance to like get through it in a reasonable amount of time. I think they're going to start doing matchmaking on all of the strikes. So you can never go in and be like, oh, I'm 13 and this is a 12 and no problem. You will always get a group of folks. So I think it's going to increase the likelihood you can get through. One other thing I think it's a risk is there's an us and them thing that goes on now, because I know how to get through one of these strikes super quick. We just run by all the trash. We just zoom by it. If there's someone not with me, not with us, who knows what we're doing, there's this, we know how to get straight to the dog and just blow by everything. The new player who's never done that before is going to get frustrated because they're going to be like, where's this Rans guy and what's he doing? Right. So it also can create if they're not careful, this sense that like the folks that know what's going on are going to feel excluded. They're going to be like, these guys are not being teammates, good teammates.
Yeah, definitely. That's something that happened in WoW and happens in any of these other games is that like when you are new, you're like, this is dumb. And once you figure it out, you're like, no, it's cool. Right. Yeah, it was hard and I accomplished it. And so it's awesome. Right. And that is something that seems like a game design problem, but it's actually just a trade off because like if you talk of people who are around in the early days of WoW, I mean, Burning Crusade partially, but especially like vanilla WoW, where you had to get 30 people that all, or was it 40? 40 people that were all in sync Molten and core. All doing their, exactly. And it was just like really dumb.
It was great.
If you pull it up, it was amazing.
But I think that's one of the themes we're talking about here is like Molten Core, 40 people. Like I got in there like 7 times because it took so long to get everyone doing it. And the guy who was doing it, it's like, he's like, this is the third time I've done this tonight. I'm going to explain it for the next 20 minutes. Please don't screw it up. But I think that's the thing is we went from that to like, super simple. And I like to think that Destiny is kind of a step back to a little more complexity and it's a brave thing to do, right? To like say, oh, by the way, it's going to be kind of hard because we're so used to this Twitter Candy Crush age of like instant gratification. I really like that it's hard. I'm enjoying it.
It seems like though that they could have and maybe even would have made the like PvE strike level, like the first 30 levels, yeah, I guess, of the game richer and more interesting in that way. Like, it can be hard, but still interesting. And the impression I've gotten, there hasn't really been like the reveal all book written on it yet of the development of Destiny, but it sounds like what happened is that they were spending a whole bunch of time on the technology, spent a whole bunch of time on like concept art and all this sort of stuff. And you know, that stuff was well along. But the storyline about a year before release was just like nonsensical and problematic. And like if
a year before release, try at release.
I believe the impression I got from like the like rumors and things I've been able to scrape together is that I shouldn't say nonsensical, because I think it was more sensical but worse. Right. Like it was actively bad, and there was a lot of it. And so they ended up, and like there was supposed to be, there's some like pre-release stuff where they talked about like more planets and more storyline and more characters and stuff like that.
Right.
They ended up cutting a lot of, and then being like, you know what, like this story isn't working. They basically kind of cut the story, and then just every time you're on your way to a mission, it's just like the speaker needs you to bleep the bloops, and then you bleep the bloops, and every level's kind of the same, which is like you just go down deeper and deeper and deeper into a hole and then kill the thing at the bottom of the hole and then warp back up to space,
right.
the parts of the game that were working, which is all of the actual mechanical stuff and the PvP and the, you know, loot and the UI. UI is really nice, actually, for a console game. And all of this stuff they kept, and then sort of it ended up being good enough that they that people were getting hooked and stuff like that. But I think it's something that you could easily see in a Destiny 2 maybe get fixed, that they sort of realize we need to bring in someone else to do story direction.
Though, on the other hand, there might be something to be said that this style of game, you don't really want a heavyweight story. That if you're going to be, you know, redoing a bunch of missions over and over again, like the last thing you want to do is replay a mission and have like 5 minutes of cutscenes that you got to sit through in the middle of a mission, right? There's something to be said for a game that's going that route of replayable content and grinding and stuff like that, of having the story be a bit of an afterthought. And I think they, you know, like, a lot of the stuff about the story in Destiny is kind of terrible. Like they're, you know, they're falling back on, and Bungie did this exact same thing with Halo, of just the, like, let's crank up the orchestral music and everything will be epic as far as the story goes. Right. And sort of vague suggestions of things going on, but not really telling you. And I mean, the voice acting is just, I don't even know what the hell's going on with the voice acting. Like, it's really very bad.
The Hive haven't been on Earth in centuries. That wizard came from the moon. I thought we had them contained there. The darkness could be a lot closer than we think.
But it doesn't matter. Like, most games, that would be fatal, you know? Like, if you played, like, a Call of Duty game, or even something that's a little more open and pick what you're doing, like Assassin's Creed or something like that. Like, those games live and die on the quality of that stuff. And I mean, there can be moments of silliness and like high level plot stuff that don't make sense, but you couldn't get away in any sort of remotely story driven game with the level of like mediocre. It's not even that it's bad. It's just that it's mediocre, the writing and the voice acting and stuff like that. But in Destiny, it doesn't matter. Like, you don't, that's not what the game is about. It's not about going through the story in order and understanding what's going on. It is just putting together these, you know, these self-contained units of gameplay, and you play through them as many times as you need to, you know, to extract what enjoyment and what rewards you can from it. And I think they'd almost be better off with less story rather than more.
I know this is, I have not played a lot of games yet, and I think a lot of folks who've been playing more games have a better and more defined opinion about the story. I kind of like the degree of story. I wrote this in the piece that I put up, which is, it's a very beautiful world. It's like gorgeous, right? And it's like, you clearly, like, shit has gone down, and it's the absence of, like, it actually fitting together. I'm like, what's going on here? And like, I kind of like all the questions, and I like the openness. And maybe that's a function of they had this great narrative that just kind of didn't hold together. And they said, okay, we got these beautiful things, and we'll tie it together in the barest of ways. But I kind of like it. I was running around the Cosmodrome, which is just gorgeous. There's all this beautiful artifacts and things that you've seen growing up and sort of adapted into this futuristic world. It's enough for me. I'm not looking for, you know, a great narrative. I get it. I think there's probably a value that comes from having a tighter narrative, but I like just these sort of sprinkled, like, you're in this world, shit's gone down. We'll explain it a little bit as we go.
Yeah, it's a cool world, even if it's, you know, I don't know why.
Yeah.
Right.
So how can people find out more about what you're up to and read your writing, Mike?
So I'm on Ranzer and Pose is the blog. I don't write about video games a lot. Maybe I will now because I'm having so much fun. I'm on Ranz. I'm the guy who sounds like Fortune Cookie on Twitter, so at Ranz. And on PlayStation, I play on the PlayStation. This is the most embarrassing gamer handle ever in the history of ever because I stole my son's. And I'm going to say it, and it pains me to even say it. Kurzinator is Kurzinator. Yes, that's the name on PlayStation. I'd love to, if people want to play, I'd love to play with them and explain the game because I'm having a lot of fun, and I don't see it stopping anytime soon.
The fact that PSN doesn't let you change your gamer handle by any mechanism is just a complete embarrassment for
it really is.
As far as I'm concerned,
it's like, a personal embarrassment for me.
It's totally ridiculous. Like almost any mechanism that they could provide of like, you have to pay like $50 to change your name, you know, like, it would be worth it at some point once you get stuck. Like my PSN handle is just my actual name.
Yeah.
Because when I got, like, I originally got the PS3 as like my secondary console, and like, I got it to play a couple of specific PS3 games. And it's just like, right, I need a PSN account. I'm probably not ever going to be playing this online. And so I didn't bother coming up with anything cleverer. And so, but now the PS4 is my main console. And so I'm playing everything online. It's just all real name. And like, I'm not super worried about it, but I would rather have something different. And I would, you know, I would submit to whatever weird requirements they had for picking it just to change it once, you know, like.
I completely agree, but it's Sony and they haven't really demonstrated technical acumen when it comes to, you know.
Anything.
Sorry, Sony. Awesome. It's a great.
thanks for listening, everybody. We always want to know what you think. So please give us some feedback. You can either send us an email, hello@upup.fm, or leave us a review on the iTunes store. And see you next time. I tend to ask our guests whether or not they're playing any games or what games they're playing, but we know that you're probably almost exclusively playing Destiny.
I am really, really into it. It's I was going to make another point during the recording is the thing that I know, and I saw this, there's a tipping point in a game where you get a character up to like a high level and then you start to do it on another character. That to me is a sign that something is correct, because you're willing to do that whole thing, even the parts that are bad, again. And I'm doing it with two other characters right now. So yes, I'm playing Destiny a lot.
How different, like, it took me a long time to make that jump for a while, like starting again from scratch. I purposely picked a class that was quite different. And it was fun, and especially because the game changed so much over the intervening years and expansions and stuff like that. But how different are the classes? Like, do you feel playing it, having been so familiar with your first class, do you feel like it's really that different?
I love the question. And there's a nuance to the characters, and it's something that is, I think, deliberately designed in that, like, you play a warrior versus a hunter on WoW. It's like night and day. So there's a lot more similarity. And I know that's a critique of the game, is there isn't that much difference between the characters, but in that nuance, like I'm playing a Titan and a Warlock right now, there is enough there that, again, it's really, it's nuanced, it's small, but I know, okay, Warlock, I can kind of hang back and, you know, I can do this soul grab thing or whatever the hell it is. Titan, I'm a little bit tougher. I can get in the mix of things and start punching things a little bit more. Again, not huge difference, but enough there. And here's the other thing I'm learning as I'm kind of getting into the raid gear at the end of the game is that the perks on the high-end gear can be game-defining and game-style-defining. So I just got this helm that I'm going to try out later today. And I'm pretty sure it's going to allow me to do some different moves in Crucible with regarding grenades. But that, I haven't seen that yet. It's something that seems to be promised as I do my research.
So what's the ability that the helm gives you?
It's what's the name of this badass piece of, hold on, let me pull it up here. I've got it on the screen. What's it called? It's called the Skull of Dire Ahamkara. And it allows you to, let's see here. The perk is called Delusions of Grandeur. You take reduced damage when using your Nova Bomb. So this Nova Bomb super that I have is going to allow me to be a little bit more offensive with my Nova Bomb. The other one it does is it replenishes my super when I kill an enemy with a grenade. So I grenade, my super is going to go up faster, which means I'm going to be more optimized on my grenades. It could be more of a grenade sort of build for a Warlock. This could be just me wanting it to be this way, by the way. We'll see how it actually plays out.
But it's interesting that it opens up potentially if there are avenues for you to make a build of a character where you're like, oh, okay, you know, I really like this. And that's something I think is really, you know, it's kind of hard to do in a competitive game, unfortunately, right. But I do enjoy about games that are RPG-like is my ability to be like, I enjoy doing this thing, so I'm going to focus on making a character that does well when they do that thing. Like, if I like shotgunning people at point-blank ranging and punching, then I just go out of my way to try and make that a viable strategy for my character because I enjoy doing it. And that's something that really shines in any sort of gear/RPG type.
And that's another point that I think is something that's revealed itself relative to Destiny in the last month is for Crucible, the weapon set that you use is, I now know that, okay, this is really tight quarters, so I'm going to have a nice auto and I'm going to have invective. And or this is going to be like medium to long corridors and whatnot. I'm like, oh, nice auto, but I'm going to use something, a fusion rifle, which is a little bit more mid to long, short to mid. And that weapon selection can vastly change your play, which to me, again, is this revealing itself, learning about the game. You're getting rewarded by figuring out like what is the optimal weapon set for a map.
The like work in the game of thinking about collecting the equipment, it's not something that appeals to me a lot personally, but it's definitely a hook. Like I was talking to Sam about his experience playing Destiny. I recorded a little bit of it. Alan Bay spliced some of it into the podcast. Like I asked him, like, what do you like about the game? And he was like, oh, well, all the stuff.
I like pulse rifles. I don't really like the shotgun, sniper rifles, scout rifles, hand cannons, sometimes auto rifles. No. Destiny is awesome.
You know, like for him, like for me, the thing that I like about the game is that the shooter gameplay is top notch. Yeah. And so it's, you know, it's hitting a real like gameplay sweet spot for me. And, you know, like, I like collecting the equipment in the sense that it makes me able to progress farther in the game, but I'm never going to get to the point where I'm like spending a huge amount of time optimizing that stuff. But for him, he was just like, yeah, the stuff. And he hasn't even hit the point yet where he's doing those kinds of optimizations. He just likes collecting the stuff. Like after every single mission, he's like back in the tower and like comparing what they've got on sale and like how good it is compared. Whereas I'm just like, I'll do a bunch of missions and like eventually I guess I've built up enough stuff I should probably go and cash in. But he's like, after every mission he's back there like buying stuff.
It's one of the, I think one of the most interesting design aspects of the game is they have this guy who shows up on Thursday night at 1 o'clock Zur, and he's there from Thursday, Friday and Saturday till early on Sunday morning, and he's only there 3 days a week, and he's got exotics on sale. He's got an engram that you can buy with motes, and he's got he can upgrade exotics as well. But he's got a loot table. It's random what he has out of that loot table, but it creates this sort of pattern or cadence to the week where you're like, okay, what is Zer going to have? And what am I going to need just in case something that I really want shows up? And that, so it's kind of cool because there's this whole, like, if you don't have time to raid, because a Crota's end run is a couple of hours, Vault is the same thing, but you have this chance to kind of still participate and see all the epic loot. With this guy here who's only there 3 days a week. And that's like maddening when you're like, what does he have? But it's like, it's an event now in Destiny. Come Thursday, Friday morning, everyone's like, what does Zer have? How does it rank? That sort of thing. It's really a kind of a cool addition to the market.
It's interesting that Destiny has taken advantage of a lot of these like free-to-play, play-to-win type random events and random things incentivizing you. Okay, you're going to grind to get a bunch of rep of this faction so that if a guy comes up, maybe you'll have something you want to buy and things like that. But on the other hand, it has none of the like scungy monetization things.
Right.
It's used all those things that hook people and like... Yeah. You know, obviously in the long term, like they recently came out with an expansion, which I heard was mostly more of the same. Mm-hmm. Not really that remarkable, but I'm sure they made a bunch of money from that and will continue to release more patches. But they've at least so far really consciously made the decision that they're going to let you just buy the game and they're going to try to make a game that you will play so much that when the next game comes out, you will buy that one.
$20, I think the DLC was. And like, I didn't think about it for a second. I wasn't even that into it at the time. So it's and by the way, it feels like a more honorable way to design a game, right? You know, as opposed to that one little mini. I mean, I remember when they started offering mounts and stuff, and WoW, I was kind of like, this feels douchebag. You know, you could buy them, but it's I'm fine with that model. It's keeping me engaged. I'll probably do most of the year, given the current degree of addiction.
Well, definitely it's something that aligns the incentives of the players and the people making the game. If you pay for it once and then it has to be good, right? I mean, assuming that you pay for it after sort of hearing reviews and stuff, which it sounds like a lot of people bought it sight unseen, but...
Well, but I think that aspect of it, of giving you a reasonable value for your money, like I was very skeptical of Destiny because of this stuff I'd heard about. Is like, okay, it's in this category of games that I know don't really appeal to me, but you know, things like hearing Alan talk about it and like reading the piece that you wrote about it on Rands and Repose, like it got me to the point of, I'm like, all right, I guess I got to give it a try. And so I got the demo and I'm like, okay, yeah, this, like, I see there's something here. And like Sam tried it and he's even more into it than I was. And then down at a used game store and they had a copy there for $25. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know if I'd pay $70 for this, but like $25 bucks for sure, I'm in, you know? That there's that knock-on effect of, if you give people reasonable value, that word of mouth spreads it, you know, that that people say good things about it, and it'll reach that like tipping point with people that are on the fence like me. If I was just like, yeah, all right, I guess I gotta give a shot because people are saying good things.
I hadn't initially realized that the technique that they've done with the raids, which people complain about, which is that if you want to do a raid, which is supposedly to be the best content, you need 6 friends to play it with. You can't just matchmake with random people. And at first I was like, that's kind of a weird decision. But that actually incentivizes people who are into the game and still enjoying it to evangelize the game. Hey guys, I'm still playing Destiny. Add me. I'm Personator. Buy the game.
It's totally brilliant. You got someone who writes about management and leadership and design. And I wrote I'm sitting on this podcast with you right now because they haven't given me anything other than the game because it part of it was motivated, as I said earlier, about like, hey, I want to have a quality set of people to play with. And you go do matchmaking, you end up with random Joe who's really bad, or Joette. And it's just, whether that's by design or just they didn't have time to work on like matchmaking and that sort of thing, it's really smart because, again, I want to play with a team. I want to get to the raid content. I want to be able to handle it with a competent people. And, you know, to do that, they incentivize me to do that.
Destiny has specifically said, or Bungie has specifically said, that they don't want matchmaking for raids because they want to design them assuming you're working together and you know each other.
Totally. I'm down with that.
I mean, even in matches where you don't have that, there's always something really satisfying when you get randomly matched with some people and you like click as a team. and things are kind of firing on all cylinders for a couple of games that you're playing together. And, you know, there's certain things you can do in the game if you know that people have a chance to gel as a team that you can't do if you're just waiting for that occasional fluke of, you know, everyone has actually got voice chat set up and everyone kind of knows what they're doing and stuff like that. Whereas if you just say, like, you need to get the team together before, then you can put those challenges into the gameplay.
It's fascinating to see the amount of cottage external websites, industries around getting raids together. The 100, it's really, really good in terms of place to go and put your name in. And it's more like Instaclan, but, you know, kind of put in some criteria. Like, hey, I'm a dad. I don't like swearing. Please, you know, do have a mic. They put you into a group and the group schedules something on a calendar for a future date. And it's pretty good. And I've had other people who said they like it in terms of finding folks. But I've got 20, 30 people now. And my last two raid nights, I've been able to sit down, create a party, go, hey, everybody, you know, mail enough folks that I haven't had to go to the internet to find folks, which is really nice.
That kind of stuff always, like, partially because I'm so newbie still, like I'm level 20 only. I find that stuff like fascinating, but I feel like it's inevitable that I would be the guy everyone would want to kick because, like, realistically, I'm just not that good yet.
But that's the thing about finding those folks is, like, I go in, I'm like, hey, I've never done Crota. I'm a dumbass here. And everyone's cool about it. That's about finding your people to, and that's the problem with the matchmaking piece is you get, you know, those folks that are going too fast or aren't kind human beings. So, but it's the raid part is really the puzzle part. That's a ton of fun.
Oh, this is cool. I'm looking at the 100 here now. They have options. In addition to being able to say that you want either casual or get it done, you can also choose that you would rather be matched with college students, parents, no profanity, or PvP only.
Exactly.
And I don't know what this says about me because I'm not a parent yet, but I would probably choose parents. I would just feel like people who are not going to be like... I guess that's maybe comparable to no profanity, but I don't actually mind the profanity. I just mind the 10 people who are probably spouting it.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, so now we're going to play the theme song again and talk about something. <interesting.
laughs> is anything other than Destiny? What are you talking about?
I don't know if there is anything other than Destiny, actually. The folks at Polygon who were, like, pretty negative about it, like, they gave the game a 6 and then they gave the sequel or the expansion a 5 out of 10. I've seen some commentary from their editors that they're basically just completely blown away by how much people want to read things about Destiny. Any article they make, which is just like, oh, something about this one soundtrack song in Destiny, or hey, what something about they may be certain different equipment appearing in the you know, in the PvP. Then it's just like ridiculous amounts of traffic, ridiculous amounts of people reading it, and like people who love it and hate it, people who just read the articles to just complain about Destiny in the comments, and it's just like a cultural phenomenon, which is interesting.
I think there was a, I think you just, one of the, speaking is the meta here, it's like, I think the expectations were so high. That's a really hard thing to, like, meet, was there was so much buzz before it. And it sounds like you guys talked about it as well. I wasn't paying that much attention. I'm like, oh, there's this thing called Destiny coming. My son was telling me about it. But, like, it's, how do you meet those expectations? I think it's just a really hard thing to meet. So I understand it coming from, I worked at Apple and, you know, they went, there's a reason they don't say anything before a product launches. They say nothing at all. It's because, first off, they want to tell a great story and, like, market it to everyone. But they also, like, you know, those expectations that get built are really hard to meet.
It would be really frustrating to me when I was working at Apple and I would see a leaked story or, like, supposedly a leaked story that would set unreasonable expectations. Like,
absolutely,
a new version of iWork is coming out and it's going to have real-time editing on all native platforms. I'm like, no, it's not. That prototype didn't work very well.
I think I saw that.
Oh, man. I think they have that now on the web, I think, maybe. But yeah, like, this is, like, years before even that, and it's just, like, you know, whatever rumor site saying this thing is definitely coming and it's going to be amazing. And I'm like, and that's, I'm sure, was happening in many, you know, in many people's minds at Bungie, like, you know, feeling all that pressure of all those years. Okay, finally, they're free from the publishers. They're making completely their own IP. They can do anything. And so all mistakes are their fault.
Yeah. But it was interesting because the thing, I wasn't paying that much attention, but the story about Destiny before it started was, it was this blend, beautiful blend of FPS and MMO and all of these things coming together in one place. And you get in there and you're like, oh God, this isn't anything. It's like a little bit of all these things, but it's like, it's not an MMO. It's not FPS. It's kind of FPS. It is FPS. But again, I've been soaking in it and I'm clearly like drinking the Kool-Aid here big time, but it is a nice blend of those things. I find the elements that I like of WoW. I find the elements that I like of, you know, the shooters from, you know, millions of years ago. That blend is actually, I think they did actually achieve that. It is something unique. And I think that's one of the things that people like it right now. It is love it or hate it. It is something entirely unique that's going on right now.
I think even if you view Destiny as a failure, you would have to grant that it's a very ambitious, interesting failure. Like, it's not just, you know, it's not just like a Duke Nukem Forever of just some people made a really bad game and took a long time to do it. It's like, no, there's all sorts of interesting stuff here. And I don't think even anyone that said, oh, well, it doesn't work for me, could possibly say that they didn't achieve to the best that they could what they set out to do in terms of that ambitious stuff.
Well, although Destiny has very few of the RPG trappings, like the, you know, skills and crafting and all this sort of stuff, and you know, interpersonal relationships, or even the ability to communicate in the game, like you go to the tower and like everyone's mute, right? But the things that it does have, a lot of them, they have innovations that will now make other RPGs feel broken. Like the way the inventory management works, in that you just have this nice menu that's splayed out in a certain way, and you have the little sub icons for gear that you haven't taken a look at yet, or you know, backup gear that you can swap to, and it's just one tap to compare. Totally. Everything auto compares. Like, compare that to playing something like Skyrim, or just really any RPG. Like, I'd say 95% of RPGs, especially on console, but you know, PC. I tried playing Torchlight, I believe it was. No, not Torchlight. What was the other one? There's one, there's like a Kickstarter for like, oh, it's gonna be like an old school RPG like Baldur's Gate. And I'm like, that's awesome, I loved Baldur's Gate. And you play it and you're like, wait a minute, this actually sucked in a lot of ways. I forgot that inventory management, where you have to literally fit things into the bags in certain ways. And oh man, it's the worst.
The thing I find kind of amazing about the Destiny UI is how good it is, given how kind of terrible the concept sounds. Like, if you described it to someone, I'm just like, all right, you're going to have this UI and everything's going to parallax.
Yeah.
Like, every single thing on screen is going to move every time you move your pointer. You'd be like, you're an idiot. You're a complete jackass. That can't possibly work. And yet that's what it does. And it's like kind of cool.
Well, if you told me I'm going to have a console RPG and I'm going to have the inventory management done with a cursor, I would say, screw you. Like, please don't do that ever. You're obviously going to fail. But it ends up working way better than you expected, because you can have quite a few things on screen, and the parallax makes it easier to navigate around. And then there's actually something interesting about the cursor that they do, which is quite subtle, but it really helps the UI work, which is that when the cursor hits a clickable element, the movement of the cursor slows down.
Which, oh, really?
Yeah. So if you sweep across and then you hit something that's tappable, the cursor will slow down as it goes over it, and then speed up as it goes to the other side. And that makes it, that would be really annoying on like a touch UI. Like, if you slow things down, it feels like molasses. And even on a mouse, I think it would feel really weird, but on the console joystick, it feels good.
And like the hold to, you know, the hold to act on basically like everything. It's another thing if you're like, yeah, okay, that solves a UI problem, but I, you know, most places you don't need it. But there's something about it that's kind of, you know, it kind of gets really nice flow out of moving around the UI once you get used to
and
it.
And they have different versions of amount of time. Like, if you're about to disassemble an exotic, the time it takes is like about 5 seconds, because it's going like, are you sure you're gonna go want to do this thing there? And if it's something which is a zero implication sort of decision, it happens really quick. But once you get used to that mechanic, it's sort of a safeguard, because you sit there and you go like, oh, okay, yeah, I gotta take this apart, I need the materials, and you're like, you think about it, which is, there's a lot of beautiful UI flourishes in the UI.
Even just like going to orbit, right? Like, Alan was complaining when we were playing the other day about, oh, like, it's taken so much longer to go to orbit. And I was like, yeah, because it's giving me the opportunity to bail.
Right.
Like, when you go to orbit in single player, it's just like, you know, you hold the button and it's basically like all you're costing yourself is a load screen. So it's only like a couple of seconds. Right. But when you're going to orbit with, you know, with other people in your party, like you're potentially pulling them away from stuff. And so it gives them an opportunity to bail on the fire team and keep doing what they're doing, which means it's got to be a longer, like a longer burn down on that, which is really clever once you realize what's going on.
Yeah. I think the UI, the heads up display, and also the inventory management piece is just good. I haven't played enough to compare a lot, but it's, the other thing about it is now that I'm good at it, I fly inside of it, which is another sign of a well, the good design UI is like, there's very little friction for me to like be moving things around and jumping in and inviting people and inspecting folks. So I like that too. That feels like it's been growing with me, or it's designed so that I continue to get better at it.
Yeah. Designing a UI around like, especially the in-game, like while you're playing heads up and stuff like that, and doing things like the colors of the ammo, like it's just wired in my brain really quickly that what the green, purple, and white ammo is, and when I'm out of which, and how to deal with that. That makes sense that the creators of Halo would have nailed that stuff better than they would have nailed like good voice acting, but they sure did.
He is just, Peter Dinklage is just, I know this is the oldest joke, and it's like he could care less that he's doing it, and you could just hear it, and you're like, wow, this guy, it's like, he's like, this is $1 million, and I gotta do this for the next week, and I'm just gonna get done with it. It's just, there's so little heart to it. It's just so bad.
I mean, part of it may also be somewhat intentional, because the character is supposed to be like this, like robot kind of thing, like, but, yeah, I don't know, there's something about it that just doesn't work. And I mean, obviously the guy's like a really good actor in other respects. So I'm reluctant to just fully blame him for it, but I kind of feel like there was some mismatch there of, you know, it's hard to make a robotic voice sound good, you know, like it's going to have that lack of emotion. Like the amount of work they put into like getting GLaDOS in the Portal games,
right,
you know, sounding both robotic, but also having the emotion there. Like they would, you know, they would do stuff like speech synthesize stuff and then have the actress like try and mimic the speech synthesis version of the voice, but give it that little bit of extra emotional weight, and just that, you know, it's a hard thing to hit, and they entirely failed to do it with
With GLaDOS, they actually had her say lines in a few different ways, and they cut and pasted parts of her saying the line into each other. And so,
of course, that makes
it gave that feel of it being choppy, even though it was a human performance. Whereas for Peter Dinklage, it seemed pretty obvious that they had given him, and also maybe some of the voice acting was re-recorded like at the last minute if they were changing around the story, but they gave him context-free things that, and like something that's really problematic with the Destiny story and the way that they present it is that they create a lot of nouns that they don't describe. And this is just a general world building problem in any sci-fi and fantasy, but they're particularly bad for it. So he says something like, the traveler is on the moon, and that's supposed to be so amazing, but we're like, what? You know, like the moon being something we're used to, but you're, you know, thinking about it in a different context, and we don't say who the traveler is. But you know, apparently that's a big deal. I can't believe the traveler is there.
I still do not understand like which enemies are associated with, like, I feel like there's multiple groups of enemies, like there's not just like one faction, but I could not tell you how many groups of enemies there are and which individual enemies. Like they say, like, okay, you've got to kill like 10 Hive Ultras to unlock this. Yeah. And I'm like, are the guys that I'm fighting now the Hive? I don't know. No. like the numbers going up. So clearly some of the guys I'm fighting are the Hive.
Well, there's like the robo guys and like the bug guys. And then there's the like zombie guys. I think
the Fallen. If you go play, if you have a problem like I do, you'll know all these things. But it's still something you're like, where do I have to go to do that thing? Here's another one that's incredibly annoying is you're on the planet. You're on a planet or wherever the hell you are. You can't go see the map again. And it's like there's these world events that kind of show up like every 10 minutes or so. They're actually pretty cool. But like knowing where there's no map when you're on the planet. This is incredibly stupid, right? You should be able to like be like, okay, I'm here and I need to get there because there's a thing. And it's just, wow, I got this so right over time. But that's something that's just missing right now is that ability to kind of get around.
It took me all the way of playing through the Cosmodrome levels to realize that those were the same map.
Yeah.
Like I didn't get initially that, no, I'm just like that map that you look at the beginning is like the map of the level,
right,
and you're landing on different spots in the level. Like, finally, I was like wandering around. I'm like, wait a second. Like, this is where that first mission that I did happened. Like, what the hell's going on? And then I like looked at the map carefully and was able to work out, like, no, actually, I've just been playing on one map that whole time, and I had no clue. Like, not even the slightest inkling that that's what was going on. I just assumed it was all independent levels in the same visual style.
That also might be scar tissue from them having it be more open than it is now. Like, you can imagine them being more wild-like, where you wander around and find the next mission, and they rightfully, you know, join the modern era of, okay, let's just warp you to kind of where you need to start.
Yeah, there's something that feels like the map and that whole area feels like a bug to me, and that could be a good sign of like something where they had to like quickly kind of engineer themselves into a different design so they could get the game out. It does feel like a bug.
Yeah, there's no map in the tower either. Like, you can walk up to a map and look at one, but there's no like map context button.
There is a robot that has a map you can go to, but you've got a light robot with Peter Dinklage guy right over here on your shoulder. You should be able to like
who can resurrect you from the dead.
Exactly. Like, give me a fucking map.
You think he could have like a map, you know?